Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Morning Lineup podcast. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. I am joined by Richard Justice. And today, we're taking a break from the hot stove to turn to another hot topic, and that's the 2018 Hall of Fame ballot. Richard, it's that time of year, man. We all start screaming at each other about old statistics and, you know, should DHs go into the Hall of Fame and, you know, basic morality in some cases.
You're right.
It's always a good time, right?
Yeah. You know what's weird about the last 5 or 6 years in the era of analytics and the era of data? There are more ways now to assess a player's career than ever before. So you know what that means? More screaming than ever before. But I'm encouraged by the fact that we're putting more people in. You know, we in the 12 players the last four elections. You know, before that, 4 players in the last 4 elections. The, you know, I don't know if people know this. The voting started in 1936. In 78 elections, the writers have only put in 124 players. That's less than 2 a year. So the standards are pretty high. I always like to look at Hank Aaron, who was left off 9 ballots. So you want to look at that guy and say, buddy, I don't know what your standards were, but you might revisit them.
Well, there are obviously complicating factors. Yeah, I think back to 2013 when the BBWA had this, you know, massive quality candidates and elected nobody.
Right.
3 dead dudes went in the Hall of Fame that year from the Veterans Committee, and that was it. But obviously, as you said, you know, a lot has changed for the better in the time since. But we still have this glut of, in my opinion, you know, Hall of Fame worthy players. I can count at least a dozen guys on this ballot with Hall of Fame credentials. But as I said, complicating factors. One, you know, the BBWA members, they tried to get the ballot limitations raised from 10 votes to 12. The Hall said no. You can still only vote for 10 guys. You know, you have the stain of the steroid era, of course, which is made even more complicated by Joe Morgan's letter sent to Hall voters in November, you know, imploring them not to vote for the so-called steroid guys. So there's a lot of factors. And then also lack of transparency. You know, as we as the BBWA voted last year to have full transparency with the ballots, that's another thing that the Hall turned down. But then if you have that, I think you get away from those cases where, you know, guys start leaving guys off ballot more strategically, or at least explain why they did it. You know, you get a guy like when Ken Griffey Jr., I think it was like 3 votes he didn't get, if I remember right. You know, and I'm sure in each of those 3 cases, it was probably strategic just because he's getting in the Hall. So I'm going to vote for, you know, 10 other guys just to help their candidacy. So I think the rule of 10 more than anything is the really frustrating thing.
Yeah. And I looked at that. I looked at the ballot this year and I could make a case, I would say easy for 15. I voted for 10, easy for 15. And I'm not even putting Omar Vizquel in there because I think that's another conversation about what he contributed. But, you know, like a guy like Scott Rolen, yeah, you know, I knew him. I know what he meant. I know how he played the position defensively. And you're worried because of the backlog of candidates, that he's going to be 5% off the ballot. Maybe not. I hope that's not the case. Guy like Jeff Kent, you know, like how do you work Kent in when you have so many qualified Kent? I'm always frustrated by Mussina and Schilling. Like in the era in which they pitched, they were Hall of Fame performers. And they have not gotten close yet, although they're getting closer. I would suggest that Curt Schilling get off Twitter for a while and let us just consider his candidacy instead of his Twitter persona.
Let's kick off our 2018 Morning Lineup podcast, Hall of Fame ballot ballyhoo. We'll talk about the new guys, Richard. There are 19 new guys on the ballot here in the 2018 ballot. Chipper Jones, Jim Thome. Oh, by the way, I'm listing these guys in order of their career wins above replacement from most to least. So Chipper Jones, Jim Thome, Scott Rolen, Andrew Jones, Johan Santana, Johnny Damon, Carlos Zambrano, Jamie Moyer, Omar Vizquel, Chris Carpenter, Livan Hernandez, Orlando Hudson, Kevin Millwood, Kerry Wood, Carlos Lee, Aubrey Huff, Hideki Matsui, Jason Isringhausen, and Brad Lidge. Let's bring in MLB.com analyst Mike Petriello to talk about this group. And Mike, I don't really feel the need to spend a ton of time here on Chipper Jones. I think we can all agree he's a lock for this award or for this honor. But you know, who are the other guys from this list that you think are absolutely slam dunk Hall of Famers?
Probably only Chipper Jones, I think. I mean, you certainly named some guys, right? Like I haven't thought about Kevin Millwood or Orlando Hudson in quite some time. And it's fun to think about these guys. But, you know, most of these new players are there in recognition of good, strong careers, but don't have any case, right? Like Johnny Damon's not getting into the Hall of Fame. I think Chipper Jones is an obvious slam dunk. We already know he's not going to get 100% of the ballot because we've seen some writers say that. He wasn't going to anyway. He'll fly in at like, you know, 97.4%, or it doesn't really matter at that point. There is no doubt whatsoever that Chipper Jones is going to be in. And that's easy. There are other guys who I would vote for. I don't think anyone's a slam dunk. And it's kind of funny to look at a guy like Jim Thome, who had 612 home runs, you know, was one of the preeminent sluggers for a long time, and also checks off all the boxes as far as off the field stuff goes, like universally beloved, and not think of him as a slam dunk, right? Like, I believe he will get in. I'm not positive he's going to get in this year. And it says a lot about the way the game has changed and the way the ballot has changed that a guy with these credentials isn't obvious, I don't think. Like, he's going to get in, right? But just not immediately. And then the two other names on the list I think you have to consider, or three others actually, Andrew Jones, who has a really weird case, right? Like, really, really good in his 20s, maybe the best defensive center fielder of all time, and then just collapsed in his 30s. I think he's worthy of an argument, but he is going to get just destroyed by the 10-man ballot limit, because there is no way he's one of the 10 best on this ballot, and that's unfortunate for him. The other name on this ballot I would actually vote in, and I don't think he's going to get in, is Scott Rolen. I think Scott Rolen is underrated on both sides of the ball, and I just think he's going to get hurt by that 10-man ballot limit too. And then, of course, there's Omar Vizquel, who I think is going to probably be the most controversial non-Bonds Clemens guy on this, because some people swear by him. I don't think he's one of the top 15 guys on this list. I don't consider him a Hall of Famer, but even if I did, I couldn't say he's one of the top 10 guys on this list. So that rule of 10 is going to hurt a lot of guys, and that's been an issue for a couple of years now.
I would be heartbroken if Scott Rolen didn't get enough, but didn't get the 5% to stay on the ballot. I didn't vote for him, but I feel like he's got a good case. Let me ask you, how do we measure Andrew Jones and Omar Vizquel? Because if they get into the Hall of Fame, if someday they get into the Hall of Fame, it's going to be on defense. How do you weigh their candidacies?
I mean, for Omar Vizquel, I hate like talking about these guys who had these great careers to the point where we're actually discussing them seriously for the Hall of Fame and then coming up with negatives about them. You know, it seems a little unfair because they've had great careers. But when I look at his career, I don't see a Hall of Fame player here. I absolutely say, yes, he's a fantastic defender. You're absolutely right. You know, do I put him up there with Ozzie Smith? Probably not. But really, I look at a guy who was a below average hitter pretty much every year of his career, maybe with like one exception. Yes, he got a ton of hits. That's partially because he played forever. I think he, you know, made it, what, one eighth place MVP ballot once. So he was never really looked at as the best in his career, in a season during his career. So while I agree that the defense is important and that's obviously his selling point, there's just so little on the offensive side of the ball. And I couldn't cast a vote for a guy based entirely on his defense. I think Andrew Jones is a little bit different because he obviously best known for his defense, but you know, he had all those seasons of you know, 35 home runs, 41 home runs. I think he had 51 that one year. So he is not just a defensive only candidate for me. And I think, you know, if you look at his career, the first 10 seasons of his career on both sides of the ball, he's probably, you know, a Chipper Jones-esque slam dunk. And then it just fell apart so badly from there. And yeah, I feel badly. He's almost like Rollins. I think he really deserves a strong look and real consideration, and he's not going to get it because he's not one of the top 10 guys on this list. Like, I put out my hypothetical ballot and he wasn't on it just because there was no way I was going to get him on the top 10. And that means I didn't really examine him as closely as I would have liked to otherwise, just because I knew he was never going to get on the top 10.
Right. Well, it's interesting to talk about those guys in tandem, Andrew Jones and Omar Vizquel, because two very different cases when you talk about, you know, the short peak of Jones versus just the sheer longevity of Omar, you know, the sheer number of games played at a premium defensive position. That's always hard to weigh, is like, how much credit do you give to the compilers, so to speak? And then, you know, how much love do you give to the guys who had this burst of brilliance and then kind of flamed out?
You need both, I think, right? I mean, you've got to have some sort of a peak. And I don't really look at Omar Vizquel as having had any sort of discernible peak. You know, he was a very good player for 20 years. And obviously Andrew Jones is the opposite. So that's why I look at a guy, not first year on the ballot, but I look at a guy like Larry Walker, who had a great peak and was above average for, like, you know, 16 different seasons. So that's something I look at as being important. It's the Hall of Fame. You know, it's supposed to be difficult. It's supposed to be really hard to get in. And I say that even though I would vote for 10 guys or more if I were allowed to right now. I don't look at a guy and try to make excuses for him, like, oh, he didn't do this, because it's supposed to be difficult. I need a guy with a peak and who did it for a decent amount of time.
Mike, do you how do you look at the candidacy of Johan Santana? I mean, the way I see it, eight seasons, you could say, are Hall of Fame seasons, but he burst onto the scene and then he injuries killed his career. Is there, what would you say about his candidacy? Just a little short?
Yeah, I don't think he has a candidacy, honestly. It's unfortunate. And again, partially because you can't consider a guy past the top 10, but he was really the best pitcher in baseball for like, what, three seasons, maybe four? And he was good for like two or three other seasons. It's sad because he spent, even up to like a year ago, I think he spent so much time trying to come back. And it just didn't work out for him. And it's unfortunate because he could have been one of the best all time. And we saw it. But yeah, it just wasn't there for him, I don't think.
Mike, does it bother you that we're talking about guys that have a legitimate shot? Like, there is an argument to be made for Scott Rolen, but he may not even get 5% because there's such a backlog of candidates. How do you feel about that?
Depressed, maybe. I mean,
yeah.
When you say that, it reminds me, the first name that comes to mind is Kenny Lofton, who I thought had a really strong case. Right. Or Kevin Brown, I think, is another one, too. A really strong case. You know, Lou Whitaker, guys like that. But just didn't get the consideration they deserve. I'm trying to be optimistic. I don't think Rolen is going to get 5% off the ballot this year. I think there will be enough people to cast him a vote. He's not going to get close to coming in, but he deserves it. I mean, third base is historically underrepresented. I think people forget how good of a defender he was. He was really one of the best defensive third basemen. And obviously he could hit. Now he ran into some injury problems later in his career. So I don't think he's got a shot to get in. But as you said, if he's like one and done, that's crushing. It's completely unfair. Even Omar Vizquel, who I don't believe is a Hall of Famer, should probably get a little more support than one and done. But just with the limitation of the ballot, I don't know that some of these guys are going to get that.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And you hope the ERA committees kind of take care of that in those cases where that does happen to a guy like Kenny Lofton, and at least give them a look. And we'll talk with Tracy Ringlesby later about the process that goes into the, choosing the ERA committee ballot. But my last question for you, Mike, who's the guy who's going to get one vote, right? There's always somebody who gets this like stray random vote for the Hall of Fame, you know, a guy like maybe Aubrey Huff or Hideki Matsui or Brad Litt. Like, who's going to be the rando vote this year?
I love that question. Honestly, I really do. I feel like Hideki Matsui is probably a good choice, but I'm going to go with Kerry Wood. Someone is going to remember the 20 strikeout game or the Kerry Wood experience. You know what? Can I actually change my answer entirely? I forgot Jamie Moyer was on the ballot. Jamie Moyer. It's absolutely Jamie Moyer.
And that's, of course, longevity, man. Longevity has to count for something, I guess. But yes, we look forward to seeing hopefully we'll see who casts their vote for Jamie Moyer. But my thanks to Mike Petriello for his insights. Thanks, Mike. All right, shifting gears now to the holdovers on the 2018 ballot. We're going to bring in our own Joe Posnanski. I don't know if anybody's written more words about the Baseball Hall of Fame than you, Joe. So you're a worthy guest here, a very helpful guest, I'm sure. I'm going to run through the guys who are... have been on past ballots, are on this ballot. I'll start with the six guys who got north of 50% support on last year's ballot. That's Trevor Hoffman at 74%, Vlad Guerrero, 71.7%, Edgar Martinez, this is his ninth year on the ballot. He got 58.6% last year. Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are both on for the sixth time. They were both right around 54% last year, and Mike Mussina at 51.8%. Look, we got to start with, Clemens and Bonds, of course, and that's always a complicated conversation, all the more so now, with Joe Morgan's letter to the BBWA, imploring, voters to stay away from these so-called steroid guys. So, I don't know if those percentages will go up or down as a result of that letter. What are your thoughts, Joe?
Well, actually all six of them are very, very interesting, in different ways. But obviously the focus will be Clemens and Bonds. I don't think it's a question of whether or not their percentages will go up slightly or go down slightly this year. I really believe that the Joe Morgan letter buried those guys. And I know there are people who disagree with me on that, but I think that was a pretty strong directive from the vice chairman of the Baseball Hall of Fame in a letter written from the Baseball Hall of Fame web site, their particular email address. He told you don't vote for him. I mean, that was what the letter said. I mean, their names were not specifically included, but it was very clear that what the letter was saying was don't vote for Barry Bonds and don't vote for Roger Clemens. And I think that there are enough people in the Baseball Hall of Baseball Writers Association of America, more than 25%, who have been waiting or would like at least some direction from the Hall of Fame. I think they have it. So I really do believe that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens will not get elected by the BBWAA. They've got this will be year number six, so they've got five more years, I guess, in total. But I don't think their numbers are going to substantially go up, and they could go down.
Joe, we all have personal biases and guys we like and all of that stuff. Of the returning players on the ballot, is there a guy you feel strongly about that you feel has been underappreciated?
There are. There are actually three of them that I feel have been pretty wildly underappreciated. Well, even four, possibly. One is Edgar Martinez, who I think is finally, this is his ninth year. He only has 2 years left on the ballot. And I think last year he took a big, big step forward. Just a fantastic hitter who essentially isn't in the Hall of Fame. His career was short, and because he was largely a designated hitter, I think when you look at what kind of hitter he was, I mean, he's the guy, you guys know this. He's the guy, you ask almost any pitcher from the 90s who was the best hitter you faced. They all talk about Edgar. Yes, Mariano Rivera, who was the best? Edgar. You know, you ask Andy Pettit, who was the best? Edgar. I mean, they're all in awe of how good a hitter the guy was. The numbers are there. If he had played third base, which is where he started his career, if he had played third base, even if he'd played it very poorly, he'd be in the Hall of Fame right now. So he's a guy I have a very strong feeling about. Mike Mussin is another guy who took a very big step forward last year. I think he's going to keep gaining. So he's not a pet project of mine, because I think at this point a lot of people have taken him on. I got to say, third on my list is Curt Schilling.
I agree.
Yeah, I think Curt Schilling was every bit as good, if not better, than Mike Mussina. I think he is down in percentages because he's been very outspoken. He has said a lot of controversial things, a lot of, I think, disruptive things. He's unapologetic about that. That's fine. To me, it has nothing to do with what kind of pitcher he was. He was a fantastic pitcher, you know, the greatest strikeout to walk ratio, you know, of the 20th century, and unbelievable in the postseason. And then my fourth guy is sort of my personal pet guy, and that's Larry Walker. I think Larry Walker is wildly underrated because he played half his games in Coors Field. The numbers are inflated somewhat, but I think people think they're more inflated than they really are. Terrific player. And here's something that I think about a lot with the Hall of Fame. Players that did everything well, everything, field, run, hit for power, throw, every single thing that you could do on a field well, they're rare, very, very rare players. There's hardly anybody on this list. Obviously, Bonds is there. Guerrero, to some degree, although as a fielder, he certainly fell off. And Larry Walker. I mean, those are the guys that are so rare in the history of the game. I'd love to see him get more support.
Yeah, he got he was on 21.9% of ballots last year. Manny Ramirez is on 23.8%, Fred McGriff at 21.7%, Jeff Kent at 16.7%, Gary Sheffield at 13.3%, Billy Wagner at 10.2%, and Sammy Sosa at 8.6%. And you mentioned Schilling earlier, Paz. He was at 45% last year. The year before, at 52.3%. So Schilling is so bad at Twitter that his playing statistics actually got worse somehow 10 years after he retired. It's amazing how that works. But yeah, I mean, Schilling and Moose are just, I think you also have to account, especially with Moose, you have to account for the era that he pitched in. And, sure. You know, and we have those context stats now that you didn't have at the time he was pitching. And boy, you look back now and what an impact arm he really was.
That's so true. It's so true. I mean, I think you could look at a guy like him and just see the raw numbers the way that I think people used to look at it and say, oh, he won 270 games, which is a ton of games, but that's right in the same range as Tommy John, who's not in the Hall of Fame yet, Jim Codd, who's not in the Hall of Fame, Burt Blyleven, who took forever to get into the Hall of Fame. Then you look at the 3.68 ERA and you're like, that's not special. But then you realize it's a 1.23 ERA plus, which is special. 23% above league average is very, very special. Then he only won 20 once, but this is not the era of 20 wins. I mean, he is right on the cusp of so many things that have changed about baseball over the last 20, 25 years. And it's time for us to come to grips with those things. We're not going to see Gaylord Perry ever again. We're not going to see Jim Palmer ever again. There's not going to be 300 inning guys who win 20 five times. I mean, that's just not the way the game is played anymore. And Mike Mussina was just a fantastic pitcher.
Yeah, and I think we have to put Mussina and Schilling in the context of their eras. You remember the ballparks got smaller, the strike zone for a while got smaller, the bats got harder. I mean, and they excel. I mean, you talk about Mussina. I mean, I think he's 17th in wins since integration, 7th in winning percentage. I mean, he in the era in which he was delivered, he was dominant. And I feel the same way as you do about Mussina and Schilling. And the one thing I love about you mentioned Edgar Martinez, I think his career on base average is something like 415. When you've got a 418. When you've got a 418 on base percentage, I just say, come here. You go sit over there by Sandy Koufax on Sunday. We'll be fine.
That's 100% right. That's 100% right. You know, you talk about Mussina and Schilling. There's two things. There's another point to be made about those guys. Both of them, and Richard, you know this is certainly very well for Mussina. Mussina spent a huge chunk of his career in a dramatic hitter's ballpark in Baltimore. I mean, just a dramatic home run feast of a ballpark. Curt Schilling spent half his career in Boston, which is obviously not quite the ballpark it was in the 70s, but still a terrific hitter's ballpark. And Arizona, which is just a nutty hitter's ballpark. You know, so you're talking about a couple of guys who, when you look at the context, if you just look at them, just this is how I remember those guys, and you just look at their numbers in a sort of glancing way, they might not blow you away. But if you look at each of those guys in context, and I would say in particular Schilling, because of that incredible postseason that he had game after game, I thought Curt Schilling was a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm stunned that it has taken this long and that he's now going backward. Obviously, you could never have anticipated that he would be his own worst enemy in that way. But I never saw him going backward like this.
Joe, one last thing. The two guys we haven't talked about here are the two guys most likely to get in this year, and that's Trevor Hoffman and Vlad Guerrero, both north of 70% last year. So you figure they'll get that final push of support here going into 2018. But, to me, Guerrero is obvious. I mean, there were pitches in the concession stands that he somehow got the bat on. But with Hoffman, you know, when it's a reliever, when it's a closer, what for you is, what do you use as like a line of demarcation, right? You know, what is a good closer candidacy? Can you go straight off of saves? Like, how do you approach that as a voter?
It's very hard. It really, really is very hard. What's not hard is Guerrero. And I'm glad you brought up, I mean, here's the thing about the Hall of Fame, and I think sometimes we lose sight of this, because especially somebody like me who just writes about it so much and compares players so much. I recently wrote a piece about this. Vlad Guerrero was so much fun to watch play. I mean, let's not underappreciate how much fun, how many people he brought into the game. You couldn't watch that guy without getting a huge smile on your face. I mean, he'd be swinging at pitches over his head and hitting them for doubles, and he was just a blast in every single way. And that's a part of this too. I mean, it's not enough to just be that, but if you're a great, great player like Vladimir Guerrero, and you also are one of the most fun players in the history of the game, hey, that guy should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's just a reality. Relievers are very, very, very tough. And I got to admit, I'm one of the more cynical about it. And I don't mean to be, relievers are so important to the game, but you know, a guy like Trevor Hoffman just didn't pitch that many innings. He just didn't, you know, he was outstanding. He was great. Look, the league, the league couldn't hit him. I mean, he had, you know, 600 saves and he was terrific, but you know, was he a better pitcher than Mike Mussina or Curt Schilling or some of these other great starters? He wasn't, in my mind. And, you know, you start saying, okay, well, how good was he? Well, Trevor Hoffman was really, really good, but was he that much better than Billy Wagner? I think Billy Wagner was fantastic, and there are many ways to look at Billy Wagner and say he was every bit, if not better, than Trevor Hoffman. There's one guy over the last 20 years who I have no doubt in my mind. That's Mariano Rivera. That guy is a deadlock first ballot Hall of Famer. Trevor Hoffman's not as good as him, but he's still fantastic, and I'll think it's going to be a wonderful moment because he is, I think, going to get elected this year for sure.
All right, good stuff as always from Joe Posnanski. Joe, thanks for doing this.
Absolutely, thank you.
Okay, let's shift to the modern era ballot now. Just as an explainer, there are four era committees providing an avenue for hall entry for managers, umpires, execs, as well as for players retired more than 15 years. The modern era covers those whose greatest impact came between the years 1970 and 1987. those who appear on at least 12 of the 16 ballots cast by the Hall of Fame board appointed electorate will gain entry to the Hall of Fame. The winners will be announced on MLB Network at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, December 10th. This year's 10 candidates on the Modern Era ballot are Steve Garvey, Tommy John, Don Mattingly, Jack Morris, Dale Murphy, Dave Parker, Ted Simmons, Louis Tiant, Alan Trammell, and finally from the non-uniform personnel side of the spectrum, former Players Union head Marvin Miller. This ballot was determined by the Historical Overview Committee that has 11 members, one of whom is our own, Tracy Ringlesby, who joins us now. Tracy, just for starters, I mean, there are guys who are on this list who, you know, they spent a full 15 years on the BBWA ballot. And then you've got a guy like Simmons who got less than 5% of the vote on his only ballot appearance in 1994 and then fell off. So, you know, what goes into the selection process in terms of, you know, deciding who should be, who should have the chance for entry via this fashion?
We'll spend a couple of days in Cooperstown in the middle of winter and sit there and we'll go over all the different statistical things, including a lot of the more modern statistical things, the analytical approach, just to look at guys. It's a very varied committee with not just former sports writers on it, because we're trying to get as many views as possible. And we'll go over probably close to 200 players and whittle it down and whittle it down, and we'll draw up a ballot. You know, we'll have our votes and come down with a ballot. And then 6 months later, we'll have a conference call and we'll reconsider and rediscuss any possible oversights or people that we have decided since then maybe didn't fit and someone else fit better. So it's a lot of effort goes into finding that. And I think in reality, as far as putting the ballot together, I think we've done a pretty good job, because maybe that's one of the reasons that there's been a problem getting people, because the ballot, the voting, when they put that actual committee together at the winter meetings, the voting gets so split among players. I mean, 1 year, I think we had four players that came up one vote short of having the votes to get through. So, I mean, it's just a difficult process when you have to get to that level.
Tracy, one of the guys you and I feel strongly about is Jack Morris. During the World Series, I said to him one day, I said, "Hey, Jack, Dallas Keuchel did a Jack Morris thing last night. The pitching coach started toward him, and he just like, wait, don't even come down this end of the dugout." And Jack looked at me and goes, "That was in the seventh inning. That was not Jack Morris." But, I mean, you and I mean, this guy was – I know that some of the analytics don't reflect it. But this guy was a workhorse, and when the games meant the most, he was at his best. I mean, to me, he walks and talks and looks like a Hall of Famer. What do you think?
I'm just stunned that he had to go to this ballot. I mean, there are people that come on the ballot, and I'm always stunned that they don't get elected. But for the fact that Morris went through 15 votes and didn't get elected to the Hall of Fame, I don't understand what people looked at. And you know, this is where I go to the point of, there are a lot of tools that you get in evaluating a player. One of them is analytics. Not all of them is analytics. And if you talk to people that played against Jack Morris, if you watch Jack Morris pitch in critical games, that's who everybody wanted. They wanted Jack Morris on the mound if it mattered.
Right.
He was going to pitch to a point that he was going to win games. And it was like, you were confident. I mean, that game 7 against Minnesota, or for Minnesota against Atlanta, was probably as impressive an effort as we've ever seen, because it's not just that he went into the 10th inning. It's not just that he fought his way through it. He went 1-0. This wasn't a game where there was margin for error. You know, this was his game from the start. This was his game at the end. And TK knew, you just stay away from him at this point in time. He's not a guy you really want to have a conversation with, because he's going to go out and he's going to come down. I mean, even when he's in a good mood, you don't really want to have a conversation with him. But he was there, and everybody on that team felt the same way. Like, he's going to pitch. He's going to win. We know we're going to win because he's there. It didn't matter what happened, and he did. And you saw that time and again. You know, I saw him in 84 and 85 with the Tigers, or in 84 with the Tigers when I was covering the Royals. And it was like, you know, we know we're not going to win the game Morris starts. I wonder which game they could win in the playoffs, because he just wasn't going to let it happen when it mattered.
Well, I know if you saw a lot of Jack Morris at that time, you, of course, saw a lot of Alan Trammell at that time, too. He's a guy who kind of jumps out to me on this particular ballot from the former player perspective. And I know wins above replacement isn't the only way to evaluate a player, but just kind of a quick and dirty way. And, you know, his wins above replacement mark 70.4, that puts him right in the same range as Ozzie Smith, Barry Larkin, Derek Jeter. So he's one of those guys who's gotten a lot of love from the statistical community. Didn't get as much love from the BBWA. I think his highest percentage is 40.9 in his final year on the BBWA ballot. But what do you think of his candidacy, Tracy?
Well, he got me in trouble once because I wrote that the only reason he's not in the Hall of Fame is he didn't do backflips, because he's by far the best shortstop I saw. I mean, he was an excellent defensive player, but he also was a middle of the lineup guy. You know, he didn't hit leadoff, or he didn't hit second. He didn't hit seventh. He didn't hit eighth. He hit in the middle of the lineup. And when you got a guy like him that's hitting in the middle of the lineup, and he's playing shortstop as well as he plays, but he played it like just a guy that played shortstop. There was nothing fancy about him. And I think the other thing was, you know, I started covering in 76. So I watched him and Whitaker come up in the late 70s. And probably Richard knew him well. Probably the closest friend I've had in the business was a guy named Vern Pleganoff, who covered the Tigers. So I always wound up around the Tigers a lot, you know, when they would come in and over in their clubhouse. And to watch the evolution of Trammell to where he went from this quiet little shy kid in the corner to the guy that was going to keep Kurt Gibson in line and the rest of that team and keep everybody focused on what had to be done, in addition to being a great player. I think intangibles mean as much with him as statistics do. But, you know, he wasn't a flashy guy. He was a polite guy. He'd answer all the questions in the world, but he didn't have one-liners. He wasn't cute. He wasn't clever. He just played. He was just a dirt ball.
And he didn't do any backflips. Every time I see him, I want to apologize to him. Like, you know, you deserve better than this. Tracy, as you look at the rest of the ballot, you know what's interesting, what stands out to me is every one of these players Dale Murphy, Dave Parker, Ted Simmons. I mean, these were the best of the best. And yet maybe they're all – I mean, I've seen guys in Boston write about Louis Tiant, that Louis's got to get in. And I think if you saw guys in your city, you feel that way. But how do you feel that these guys are, just because they've gone through the BBWA process, they legitimately are just a little bit short, and maybe that's not what the Hall of Fame is? How do you feel, big picture standpoint?
I think the thing that I like the best about the Hall of Fame is we spend minimal time arguing about who's in the Hall of Fame, but we do get worked up over who's not in the Hall of Fame. And I think that's right, because the Hall of Fame has a higher standard than other Hall of Fames. I mean, it's not like the NFL Hall of Fame where you have to put six people in every year because they got to make sure they sell tables for their dinner. You know, it's a Hall of Fame. You know, it's not like the Basketball Hall of Fame, the Naismith Hall of Fame, where the guy that invented the jump shot can't get in because Nike gave him a big donation to put George Raveling in instead. That doesn't happen in Cooperstown. You know, in Cooperstown, you have to be voted in. And the fact that people get upset about who's not in the Hall of Fame, to me, speaks well, because it's supposed to be the elite players. It's not supposed to be the top 10%. It's supposed to be the ultimate elite. I don't agree with a lot of, hey, how about Lou Whitaker got 2% of the vote?
Right.
I mean, you know, there are guys that I could sit and make arguments about oversight. You know, I mean, this year's ballot, if you had told me that Larry Walker was going to be on the ballot for the eighth time and never get 25% of the vote, I'd have told you were nuts, because you obviously never saw him play.
All right, we'll see who, if anybody, gets in from the Modern Era ballot on December 10th. Thanks, Tracy, for doing this. All right, back to the BBWA ballot, and the results will be announced on Wednesday, January 24th at 6 p.m. on MLB Network. Richard, you cast your ballot. You had 10 men on that ballot. Who did you vote for?
I voted for Bonds and Clemens and Guerrero, Trevor Hoffman. I voted for Chipper Jones, Edgar, Mike Mussina, Curt Schilling, Jim Tomei, Billy Wagner. I feel like if you vote for Hoffman, you got to vote for Billy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and we just say this, Jason Stark made this point. If we're going to have DHs in baseball, we got to have DHs in the Hall of Fame. They're the best of the best. And if we're going to have closers, closers belong in the Hall of Fame. The guys I didn't vote for that I feel bad about, I struggle with, Scott Rowland, Larry Walker, Manny Ramirez. And you know, Manny would be he's a different kind of conversation, I understand. Jeff Kent, Andrew Jones. And I'm going to look more at Omar Vizquel. I think Mike is probably right. He's probably a little short, but it's a fun process. It's a tough process, but it's worth it when you're in Cooperstown or you're watching on TV and you see what it means to those guys. Guys like Tim Raines, who had to wait so long, what it means to them to be up there with Hank Aaron and Frank Robinson and Sandy Koufax.
Yeah, voting for the Hall of Fame. Great responsibility and a tremendous headache as well. So
right.
Thank you, Richard, for your insights on this. My thanks also to Mike Petriello, to Joe Posnanski, and to Tracy Ringlesby. And thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.